Our guest today, Richard Boylan, Dr. Richard Boylan, I've known through my late wife before he was into what he's into now. He was a clinical psychologist. He still is. He was a professor emeritus of clinical psychology. He had a very busy practice talking to people about their everyday problems. And then, oh, I guess maybe, what, the last 10 or 12 years, you've been working on starseeds. And our guests probably don't know what starseeds are, but you're the most informative person. And I just want to say right off the bat, your website is killer good. His Dr. Boylan's website goes on and on and on with links and links and links and essays and in-depth stuff. It's, you know, you could spend a week just on your website. So your website is drboylan.com, correct?
Yes.
B-O-Y-L-A-N, drboylan.com.
Just the D-R, not the full
right.
Doctor word.
Right, just the D-R. But if you really want to get into all kinds of stuff about alien technology, about how the U.S. is using it, about the cabal of evil folks who have been ruining our world, about the efforts that have been made to counteract this cabal, and what we're going to talk a bit about today was the starseeds, and I meant let you describe what that means.
Well, starseed is a person who is the new generation of human. And to put that in perspective, let me just back up a little bit historically. I'm going to lay a lot of stuff out here. You know, if anybody finds it a bit much, they can grab their aspirin bottle. The human race is bioengineered by star people coming down hundreds of millennia ago. And that's why archaeologists can never find the missing link, because there is one, not one. Is not one, because yes, we have Lucy and all the other primates, anthropoid primates from millions of years ago, but the particular human species, Homo sapiens, at first was bioengineered about 375,000 years ago, and the short version of our history is the star visitors gave that about 150,000 years to run and saw that the recipe needed improvement. The Earth first model was too violent, territorial, aggressive, so they did an upgrade in what the anthropologists call Homo sapiens sapiens, modern man, and they've let that one run about 150,000 years, and now we get to the present era, and they see that the regular humans have indeed made huge strides in technology, but their moral and spiritual development has not kept pace, and so we have the discontinuities of things like perfecting nuclear weapons and then using them on to obliterate whole cities like Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So the star visitors kind of jolted back and said the recipe needs a little more work. And so they've been visiting millions of folks, and during many of these visits, borrowing a little of their reproductive material, gene splicing in a little more of star visitor genes to the basic human recipe. And then when these folks go on to have children, they have children that are much more advanced than the regular kids of yesteryear, advanced in a number of ways. Physically, these children tend to have, in many cases, larger skulls and therefore more room for more brains, particularly in the frontal and parietal top of the head areas. They tend to grow up faster. They crawl, walk, speak, and do the other developmental milestones faster than kids of some decades past. They, on a mental level, most often tend to be very bright, and sometimes that brightness gets them into difficulties in school because they get bored easily, and then the teacher thinks they have attention deficit when really they already got what the teacher was trying to teach, and they're sitting there doodling. On a psychic level, these kids have double handfuls of psychic abilities. Of the 54 abilities I've mapped, these kids often have 20 or 30 of them, sometimes more, on a, what shall we say, metaphysical level, they tend to have a kind of consciousness that cares about the whole world, not just their town or their nation. They are as disturbed about people being annihilated by catastrophe halfway around the world as if it had happened in an adjacent state, because they understand that we are a one human global society. They tend to be naturally ecologically sensitive. They wince at some, you know, when they drive by a forest that's been clear cut, or see pollution like the current oil blowout in the Gulf of Mexico, because they understand that there's a unbroken tie of connectivity and life force between us and Mother Nature and the other living things around us. So these kids are the new generation, and in a very fundamental sense of the word, it's actually a new recipe. The other kind of, there's really two pathways. I've described the one that is perhaps the more common, where the genetic upgrading of star kids and starseed adults from the old Homo sapiens sapiens recipe. The other pathway is there are many instances where people who were star persons living on planets in different star systems have decided in this reincarnation to come and reincarnate as a human. They do so because they are aware of Earth's very delicate situation at the moment, where we will either blow ourselves up or get civilized and make it to a transformed society that will truly use the better qualities of human nature and live in harmony with the Earth. And so these what I call missionary incarnates come in to a human body and grow up and live as a human, and they bring enough of their previous consciousness as a star person with them, and their enhanced psychic abilities, that they tend to function at a higher level than a regular human when they are growing up in a human body in this incarnation.
How did they get over the memory gap? It seems like all humans incarnate from many lifetimes and have no memory. How can somebody from another star come through our system and have memory?
Well, that's part of the enhanced consciousness they come with. While they, from our point of view, kind of dumb down a bit to squeeze inside a human body and human skull and brain incapacity, they do have enough, in many cases, residual consciousness to hold memory from life before. But there are also other ones who don't manage to do that, or shall we say they don't manage to do it for a while during their life. I've had the opportunity and the privilege at times with my Star Kid, Star Seed workshops to wake up some of these individuals, because they're kind of floating along feeling like a stranger in a strange land, not knowing why, just feeling like the outcast and the misfit. Then they stumble across something like, for example, my website that explains star seeds and star being incarnates, and bingo, a light goes off in their head. They say, oh, that's why I've been feeling so strange. And then they listen to all the characteristics of a star seed, and they say, yep, that's me.
And how many of them come from a family where the parents are also starseeds? I mean, is this a sort of a lineal kind of thing that gets passed on, like the genetic material from parents to child? Or,
well, yes. In some cases, in many cases, I tracked many starseed adults and star kids, and some of them talk about being third generation of what we now would call star kids, star seeds. In other words, their mother was one, their grandmother was one. And I had one case where it went four generations. The great grandparents were, at least one of them was showed star seed characteristics.
remember one of your lectures, or one of the times I talked to you, you said that, you know, like when I was growing up, it was a very small percentage, maybe 10% of people, and now it's a very high percentage of births are coming in as these star seeds.
Yeah, it's what I call a tidal wave of incoming star kids. If you would bear with me, let me do the numbers kind of quickly here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
Because I think it tells a story when you see the numbers. The recipe adjustment, if you will, between Homo sapiens sapiens, regular humans, modern man, as the anthropologists would say, and the star kids and the adult star seeds is a reality that stretched out over much of the 20th century, and then suddenly gained steam in the late 70s, early 80s, and even more so. The numbers, I think, speak for themselves here. Among the senior population, for example, age 60 plus, 1 in 8 is a star seed. So they weren't very common 60 years ago. There weren't very many star kids being born 60 years ago. Now you get to the 45 to 60 middle-aged crowd, 1 in 5 is a star seed. You get to the young mature adults, the 30 to 45 group, almost half, 45%, are star seed. You get to the young adults in the 19 to 29-year-old crowd, two-thirds of them are star seeds. When you go to the teenagers, the 13 to 18-year-old group, 81% are star kids. And when you deal with the younger kids, the infants up to eighth graders, 96% are star kids. So you can see the closer we get to the present, the more of the population being born are star kids and growing up to be starseed adults. So the way we're going, between this incoming wave of star kids and the, as you suggested, the passing on of these genes to children, and I'm convinced, you know, it is a genome. It's transmissible by reproduction into the genes that the kids pick up, these enhanced genes. Between intermarriage and reproduction and additional star beings incarnating as humans, we are headed towards a seen in the foreseeable future where the entire human race will be starseed, but we're not there yet. At this point, best estimate I have is that about 60% of the human race is starseed or star kids, and most of that is in the younger part of the human population globally.
Well, if we back up to some of the features of the starseeds that you mentioned, of, you know, caring about global humanity and peace and ecology and all the things that KVMR listeners care about, what happens to when I look at something like the Middle East or Afghanistan or Pakistan, and I think, you know, all these young suicide bombers, how can they be immune from their starseed background? How can they persist in sort of the evilness of humanity?
Well, not all the young people are young adults or star kids. I suspect the people that get that wound up in kind of suicidal exaggerated ideology are not star kids, but star seeds, I should say, but regular humans. I wouldn't say categorically that a star seed, particularly one who hasn't woken up to their true identity, couldn't, under extraordinary circumstances, get misled into doing something that they think is for a high purpose when it isn't. But I suspect, overall, the extremist crowd are regular humans and not star seeds, because star seeds find violence abhorrent and a poor way to try to deal with human differences.
That goes back to my original question about forgetfulness when we incarnate into this world. that most of us forget where we came from or why we're here. Very, very few people, in my experience, are doing what they came here to do. They set out on a lifetime to do such and such, and they're not doing it because they forgot their mission and they just don't follow it. And they're very frustrated with their lives. You know, how many people I can just think of in one second of thought who are in the wrong job and hate it, or in the wrong marriage and hate it, or have the wrong kids and hate it. You know, they're just, their life is wrong by their internal clock because they can't remember what their mission was. So I'm just wondering, I know you're helping to wake people up to their mission or their where they came from, but if you're a listener right now and you want, and you, this resonates with you in any way, Dr. Richard Boylan has this wonderful website. It's drboylan.com, and there's just pages of links and explanations and a couple of books, and there's a free web book. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, oddly enough, it's about Star Kids. In fact, its title is Star Kids: The Emerging Cosmic Generation, which we've just been starting to talk about. That book is online for free. You can download it or read it online. It's in the Star Kids Starseed Adult section of my general webpage. There's a section with about 8 or 9 articles dedicated to Star Kids and Starseed Adults. And among there it is, and you just click on it and download it and read it and print it or whatever you want to do, and it will take you soup to nuts all the way through the subject, and with a lot more thoroughness than we will manage to achieve in our hour today, and give people a really good backgrounding in this.
How about your other books? Are any of them still available, like Project Epiphany? Or?
Well, from time to time, let me go through them real quickly. Close Extraterrestrial Encounters is my first one. Occasionally you'll find a used copy on Amazon.com, but that's the only way you'll get it. Sold out, it's out of print. Labor Journey to the Stars, ditto, sold out, out of print. Very occasionally it'll show up, a used copy on Amazon. Star Kids, well, we just talked about that. That's sold out, the hard copy, and no publisher does not intend reprinting, but it's available online for free, so you can get at it that way. Project Epiphany is still available. I've got lots of copies, and I sell it through Amazon, so if you go over there and order one, they'll shoot me the order, and we'll get a copy out real quickly.
Well, I'll even make a deal for listeners who would like to become new members or renew their membership to KVMR. I'll buy you a copy, and I'll throw that in with our thank you for becoming a member. That's Richard Boylan's book, Project Epiphany. I'll cough up for that. I'll buy it myself.
That's very kind of you. I must advise readers of the four books, that is the only one that is, quote, fiction, unquote. And I say quote, unquote, because about 95% of what goes on in that exciting narrative adventure story, sci-fi, spy, mystery adventure story, is fact. But I have to throw about 5% fiction in there to stay out of court, because I name very recognizable people and situations and places, and so it's a fun way to get a real rapid grounding on what's really going on behind the scenes, behind the UFO cover-up.
Well, I'm gonna back up just a bit to the Starseed Kids. If people not from our planet, from other places in the universe, are incarnating here or are taking human genetic material and breeding with us, where do they come from? Is it one planet or one place, or is it a bunch of different ones?
Well, a bunch of different places. Incarnating races are varied. All I can speak of with absolute certainty are the ones I've run across in my personal working with people.
And where are they from?
Well, probably the one I run across the most are Zeta Reticulans from the constellation Zeta Reticuli, visible in the southern hemisphere. From the southern hemisphere, I should say, into the night sky. they come in two basic varieties, tall and short, and a variety of skin colors. they're the plastic to ones that some people indelicately call rays, which is, I consider, bad manners, just like we don't call people the yellow race or blacks anymore. Zeta is their proper name. That's where they come from, just like African Americans, Africa, where their heritage came from. Then there's the praying mantis folks, Vestica, as they call themselves, that look like, a little bit like, they're humanoid, but they look a little bit like somebody crossed a human with a praying mantis type body structure. There are the Dorali, the kind of short dwarfish folks that come here. The reptoids, the tall humanoid ones with certain features that remind people somewhat of reptilian features. They're kind of a graininess, scaliness to the skin, kind of a protruding snout, and eyes that are more cat slit style than regular round human pupils. The humanoids, as people call them, are blondes or Nordics or Pleiadians. There are a number of races that have features that look absolutely human. The Pleiadians appear to have contributed some of their genetic material for genetic upgrading of some of the star kids. These are probably the frequent flyers. There is also energy beings that don't even have a physical body, and some people I've dealt with have suddenly woken up and recognized or been told by visiting star visitors who were energy beings that you're one of us, you came from us before you got here. So those are some of the more frequent contributors to the human visit.
Dolores Cannon has written some books about these things, and she says that prior to incarnating or in the process, that a human memory is created for the person, so that they have a memory that goes back for lifetimes. Literally, they could be hypnotized. She's hypnotized some of them, and done like past life regressions and gone through life after life after life, which didn't exist. These were created memories that were put into the person, so that they would feel human and not incarnate in a human body suddenly without any racial memory or any kind of humanness memory. She said it was just way too shocking for someone, let's say, that was a mantis person to incarnate as a human being. It would just blow them away if they hadn't had these memories implanted in them to make them feel naturally, gracefully human.
Well, I must confess I'm not a fan of Dolores Cannon. I think her accuracy rate is deplorable.
Well, I'm just saying it was an interesting scenario. I'd never heard it before. It was an interesting scenario.
Yeah, and that is completely bogus. Star visitors, one thing you can say about them as a sweeping generalization is that they don't truck in anything but truth. The idea of a well-intentioned deception is not how they operate. So the idea of creating false memory is not what they would do.
Now, if they're from different solar systems, different universes, do they somehow get together somewhere out there, like in a meeting, and say, "Okay, we all together agree we're going to have these following goals for humanity," or is each one doing it on their own?
It's an organized effort, loosely coordinated effort, but coordinated. First of all, there is an organization called Star Nations that all the advanced, morally, intellectually, and spiritually advanced civilizations are members of in our galaxy. And they operate by a set of 11 universal laws or principles and 11 spiritual laws or principles that they all subscribe to, and becomes the universal guiding set of principles by which they operate. And when certain of the races, actually there's 1,483 races that have decided to make contact with Earth and make kind of Earth one of their special projects at this time. And that's not the sum of all the members of Star Nations, which numbers, there are millions of civilizations out there. But they try to coordinate these, as with the on here on Earth, some of the races have a stronger specialty in one area and some in another. So they, to some degree, specialize in their intervention on Earth. Some are better geneticists. Some are better at passing on environmental information. Some are better at passing on physics information. Some are better at understanding foreign cultures. So each of them tries to operate in their zone of best contribution. But it's all welded together in an overall strategy.
Speaking of helping humanity, in an email in your email subscription list last week, you mentioned a 9.2 earthquake in Mexico that was apparently called off. Could you explain how that got called off, or the help that the earthquake received?
It really more got transmogrified to catch listeners up who may not have been aware of that. We got advance notice on the 4th of May that a 9.2 biggie of an earthquake was going to occur along the Sierra Madre Occidental mountain range along a stretch of that would run 1,500 miles from the New Mexico border down to near San Luis Potosi in central Mexico. And being 9.2, it would be among the greatest earthquakes in recorded history, greater than the San Francisco earthquake by far, and just a little less than the record-breaking Chilean earthquake of 1964. But about equal with the Alaskan great quake of mid-20th century that was a huge one, too. And we recognized that this was going to have serious effects because much of the structure, construction in Mexico, particularly in the poor areas, is
no rebar.
With brick, adobe, yes, masonry, and no rebar, as you say, and wood is pretty scarce, so that it's seldom you see a Mexican house made out of wood. So these are inflexible materials, and when a big earthquake comes, be a lot of cracking and dropping. So I put out the alert, and also I noticed there's a bunch of dams along, not that far from the Sierra Madre Occidental, and I suggested they'd have to do a dam watch in case there was some rupturing there. And then there's the tidal wave factor. A quake that big along that long a stretch would undoubtedly generate some tidal wave action in the Gulf of California, that stretch of sea between mainland Mexico and Baja California, and create some pretty hazardous situations for villages fronting on that. So we had a situation there that really demanded full-on alert and wariness. As we got closer to the absolute day, the epicenter day, if you will, was determined to be May 14. Got some information that it says star visitors and inner Earth people, intelligent civilization that lives underneath the Earth, were going to team up to work on the Sierra Madre Occidental tectonic plate structure and see that the 9.2 big quake did not occur. Subsequently, analyzing the U.S. Geological Survey earthquake reports, it looks like what they did is bleed off the huge tension that had built up under there into a series of about 25 modified earthquakes in the region where Mexico and main Mexico and Baja California and the part of California near the Salton Sea all come together. There were, like I say, 25 earthquakes, the biggest of which was 4.8. You know, enough to be felt, but not enough to be damaging. And with this bleeding off of the pressure, they were able to, and I also, they introduced some energy into the fissure, the fault lines, to make the sliding go a little more smoothly and not get stuck up and backed up into high pressure so much. So the combination of all of that caused the big quake not to happen, and the bleeding off pressure into that the Gulf near Baja seemed to do the trick.
If they can avert an earthquake, could they cap that well that's bubbling oil into the Gulf?
Well, technologically, yes. Is that the right thing to do? I've had that question asked before, and I've answered like this. First of all, it's not their problem. This oil blowout is due to British Petroleum's greed and going into unprecedented depths in the ocean and into the mantle below the ocean, when the technology for operating at that depth had not been perfected yet. So this is wild, reckless, and in my view, criminal behavior by a multinational corporation that needs to be addressed. Number two, Mother Earth is, by this act, giving humans a opportunity to see right in front of their faces what big oil is doing all over the world, and particularly in the third world, in terms of oil spills that never get reported, as in Africa, the northern slope of North America, etc. And this is a wake-up call that humans slowly but surely are getting out of their torpor and learning to take seriously that we have a problem here, Houston. The big oil boys are destroying the environment in a big way, and we can't just say, oh, well, fill up my car with gas anymore. So it's a human responsibility, and we need to address it. So that is the stance they're taking at this point, and not just magically covering it up, and you know, then we turn our attention to something else and forget the lesson.
Well, the lesson may have something to do with the evil cabal that runs the world. And you mentioned in one of your newsletters that that the star seeds and the visitors had somehow disempowered them from continuing their evil ways. What's the story on that?
Well, I would never say anything that global. They are still running around trying to run the world, and British Petroleum is one of their assets, along with most of the other major oil and most of the aerospace military contractors and Wall Street, etc. There's enough villainy out there. For the people who are not familiar with the term cabal, we use it as a catchword for the global plutocrat cartel that buy politicians and move money in huge ways and own everything in sight that has any profit and power potential, and have been ruling societies globally for a long time and are still very much at the helm, although some of them are getting exposed, and many light workers around the world are working hard to expose them and to get them out of power and replace them with good people.
I think, didn't you say that they were forbidden to reincarnate?
Yes, there's that much, at least, that Star Nations has asked Source, God, if you will, and put this matter out and asked that these individuals not be allowed to reincarnate as on Earth after they finish their life here. So we will be done with this evil generation, and to understand the iniquity properly, we have to understand that the main folks in running this cabal cartel have deliberately reincarnated from one lifetime to the next and gone right back into evil doing and power tripping and wealth aggregating of set purpose, and each incarnation looking for fellow travelers and coalescing with them into power blocks. So putting these boys out of business by saying, when you so-and-sos die this time, that's it, adios, no regrets. That is a helpful sign for our future, that at least we won't have them coming back doing their coalescing into power blocks again.
I've wondered aloud on this show many times how everybody that I know is a basically decent person. I don't think I've ever met anybody that's truly evil, and yet the world seems to be run by truly evil people.
I could introduce you to a few.
Well, in your business, sure, but
yeah.
I tend to
avoid
those folks in my life.
Yes, yes. Well, people of high nature do not necessarily enjoy spending very much time with that crowd. But they exist still in enough numbers to be a problem for us. And we all need to roll up our sleeves. Everything as mundane as voting good people in, voting bad people out of office, and we're going to have a shot at another round of that this November, up to getting involved in economic and ecological reform movements. And anything you can do to improve our societal way we function is a blow for the right direction.
Indeed it is. You have a newsletter, which I subscribe to. Could you tell our listeners how they can get that if they have email?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have a newsletter, and I have an online group for Star Seeds and Star Light Workers and Humans of Goodwill. The newsletter, to subscribe to that, it's called Dr. Rich Boylan Report. So it's real easy to subscribe. All you have to do is send an email to Dr. Rich Boylan Report, Dr. Rich Boylan, Boylan Reports, all one word, hyphen subscribe at yahoogroups with an S on the end, .com. So that's Dr. Rich Boylan Reports hyphen subscribe at yahoogroups.com.
And they can find that also on your website if they forget. The website is Dr. Boylan, drboylan.com.
Yeah, if you go down to the bottom of it, in the kind of links section at the start of that, it tells how to get onto either of my online groups.
There's so much on your website that's fascinating to me, and we don't have time to talk about it today, but if the listeners want to look into alien technology that's been taken over by our U.S. military, Dr. Boylan has a huge, probably the best thing I've ever read on that on his website, where you can read about how artificial intelligence from aliens is going into our F-35 fighter planes and
F-22A,
anti-gravity and the B-2 bomber.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's funny because people have seen the F-22 flying and some F-35, although that's kind of a rare bird, and the B-2 bomber, of course, and to recognize that there's some Star Visitor technology that's been hijacked and inserted in there is indeed, I don't know what you would call it, disquieting is one reaction.
Well, it is disquieting, and the listeners can get to your website. And I told them I wasn't going to interrupt you too much to do any membership drive stuff because I value your conversation, and you don't get to talk with us too often here on KVMR, but we're certainly going to have you back. And like I said, I will buy that Project Epiphany book for anybody that wants to renew their membership or become a new member. And I'll let you go, and I'll talk to the listeners a little bit more. But I do want to have you back and maybe talk about some of that alien technology next time.
It'd be my pleasure, Dr. Haynes. It's always a delight to speak with you and your listeners, and appreciate the high consciousness that seems to be pooled around Nevada City.
Thanks. Good talking to you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.